Anna Fox hasn't left her Harlem brownstone in 10 months. Her days follow a predictable rhythm, waking late, mixing prescription medications with generous pours of Merlot, and watching her neighbors through her camera's powerful zoom lens. A child psychologist by training, she now counsels fellow agoraphobics in online forums while her own world shrinks to the dimensions of her five-story home. The neighborhood unfolds before her like living theater. Rita's afternoon rendezvous with her contractor, the Gray Sisters book clubs, the Takeda boy practicing cello at 4 p.m. Her controlled environment is punctuated by scheduled interventions, Bina's physical therapy sessions, French lessons with Eve, and therapy with Dr. Fielding, who employs cognitive techniques to help her reclaim her freedom. The painful separation from her husband Ed and daughter Olivia manifests in regular calls filled with longing. "I wish you were here," she tells Ed, whose careful response about needing more time suggests deeper complications. Her drinking has become more than habit. It's a coping mechanism that blurs the edges of her confinement while simultaneously reinforcing it. Through her lens, she observes others living while gradually losing touch with her own life, becoming more observer than participant in the human drama unfolding around her. The Russell family's arrival at House 207 disrupts Anna's isolation. Through her telephoto lens, she observes Alistair in tailored suits, artistic Jane, and withdrawn teenage Ethan. When Ethan delivers a lavender candle, Anna slips into her therapist role. Despite his cat allergy, he pets Punch gently, showing sensitivity that mirrors Anna's vulnerability. His mention that he can see her house creates an unexpected connection. Later, Jane Russell arrives unannounced with Riesling, her vibrant presence enlivening Anna's home. Over wine and cigarettes, they form a quick bond. When Jane playfully acknowledges Anna's spyglass, embarrassment turns to conspiratorial understanding. Jane reveals troubling details about Alistair's controlling nature while hinting at her own complicated past. These encounters awaken Anna's desire for connection, making her feel young again, almost giddy after months of isolation. Late one night, heavily intoxicated, Anna watches through her camera as Jane appears in the Russell house with a knife in her chest, blood spreading across her blouse. Jane presses her bloody hand against the window before collapsing. Anna calls 911 but struggles to explain what she's seen through her drug and alcohol haze. Breaking her year-long agoraphobia, Anna forces herself outside, counting steps as she stumbles through the park before collapsing when sirens approach. In the hospital, Detective Little contradicts her story, saying he visited the Russells that morning. Back home, Detective Norelli arrives with Alistair Russell and plays Anna's barely intelligible 911 call. The detective suggests she hallucinated from mixing wine and medication. Alistair claims his wife has been away when a woman Anna doesn't recognize enters with Ethan, introduced as Jane Russell. Anna's certainty wavers as everyone denies her reality. Even Ethan mumbles that Anna never met his mother, though his body language, averted gaze, leftward glance, fingernail picking, suggests deception. Alone, Anna calls her physical therapist, Bina, who remains skeptical about her claims. Anna insists she met Jane twice and saw her bleeding, realizing police won't believe her until they accept the current, Jane, is an imposter. Anna discovers Alistair was terminated weeks ago, and his assistant admits to never meeting Jane, despite 6 months of employment. Later, Anna spots the woman leaving the Russell house in a red coat. She takes Ativan, ventures outside with eyes closed, and confronts the woman in a coffee shop, who dismisses her as drunk. Nick Takeda finds Anna frozen and guides her home. When Ethan appears concerned, Anna confronts him about lying. Though he claims the woman is his mother, Anna presses him about his real mother's whereabouts. Ethan whispers, "I'm scared," before fleeing. Anna's reality shatters when Detective Little reveals the truth. Her husband and daughter died after their car went off a cliff. Anna survived 2 nights in a snowstorm, but Olivia died shortly after, and Ed immediately. Her agoraphobia began then. Her conversations with Ed and Olivia were manifestations of grief and guilt. After days of drinking, Anna experiences clarity. Perhaps the woman she met wasn't Jane Russell, but an imposter. Her theory is interrupted when Alistair breaks in wearing gloves, returns Ethan's key, and warns her away from his son. When Anna mentions that woman, Alistair attacks her, choking her before leaving. The next day, Anna finds a photo showing Jane's reflection, proof she existed. She calls Ethan, believing he's her only ally. When he arrives, Anna shows him the photo and says, "I think it's time for the truth." Ethan begs Anna to let him tell his parents before contacting police about Katie's murder. She reluctantly agrees. Later, Anna realizes something crucial. Ethan couldn't have known about Punch's injured paw from his previous visit. She finds him in her doorway holding the letter opener used to kill Katie. He reveals he's been entering her house with a copied key. Ethan admits Katie was an addict, but he was her murderer. Worse, he was Lizzie from the Agoraphobia Forum, creating a fake identity to learn Anna's secrets. Anna kicks Ethan violently and flees into the dark hallway, her heart pounding as she races through familiar darkness. Though gone, Ed and Olivia's internalized voices guide her psychological compass. "Move, baby," Ed's voice echoes. "You're stronger than you know," Olivia whispers. At the landing, Anna's trembling hands find the trapdoor chain. The rusted mechanism reveals the night sky, a sight both terrifying and beckoning. Rain pelts through the opening, each drop reminding her of the vast space beyond. On the rain-slicked roof, Anna confronts her dual nightmare, crippling agoraphobia and a murderous teenager. Despite 10 months of fearing open spaces, Anna discovers unexpected strength. Her bare feet grip the wet surface as she evades Ethan's attacks, revealing that beneath grief, wine-soaked nights, and medication haze lies an unbreakable survival instinct. When help arrives, they find Anna drenched but alive, having conquered not just a killer, but her self-made prison. The rain feels cleansing, washing away months of isolation. Anna's agoraphobia represents the emotional void left by her family's death, transforming her home into both refuge and prison. Her obsessive photography, documentation of neighbors, and retreat into classic films serve as control mechanisms against an unmanageable reality. After confronting Ethan, Anna begins healing with Bina's support, preparing to step into her snow-covered garden. She realizes with clarity if she fought so desperately for her life on that rain-drenched roof, she must want to live. And truly living requires rejoining the world beyond her walls. Standing at her threshold with winter sunshine streaming through the open door, Anna takes a deep breath. She draws on her strength from the roof confrontation, faces the pristine landscape, and steps into the light, walking purposefully toward her future. Through her broken windows, we glimpse our own vulnerability to deception. Her journey reminds us that healing begins when we're brave enough to face our painful truths.